This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation, January 29th, 2009. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, The Poet and the Saint.
Mowa rodzinna niechaj będzie prosta, ażeby każdy, kto usłyszy słowo, widział jabłonie, rzekę, zakręt drogi, tak jak się widzi w letniej błyskawicy.
That's Czesław Miłosz reading. He was one of the greats of 20th century poetry. In 1980, he was catapulted to fame when he won the Nobel Prize for Literature. His poems obsess over history, the history he personally lived through as a Pole when the Nazis overran Eastern Europe, only to be dominated after the war by the Soviets.
Poland was not the place to be in the 20th century, as we all know.
That's Cynthia Haven, a literary critic who recently wrote a piece for PoetryFoundation.org about Miłosz. In that article, Cynthia Haven tells the story of a weird coincidence. Czesław Miłosz died on August 14th, 2004. August 14th is a holiday honoring an old nemesis of Miłosz's, the Polish saint Maximilian Kolbe. Kolbe and Miłosz never actually met, and Kolbe may not have even known about Miłosz's existence, but there was antagonism there.
The antagonistic relationship was largely in Miłosz's mind, as I point out in the article.
An article that is the first to tell us this little-known story about the human side of the great poet, one of his, what he called, unavoidable contradictions. Before World War II, at the age of 25, Miłosz went to work for Polish National Radio as a literary programmer. It was his first real job. Kolbe, at the time, was a powerful Franciscan monk who ran a monastery and a media empire, newspapers, magazines, even a radio station. According to Miłosz,
there was some noise in Kolbe's newspapers, which were very influential in Poland at the time, that he was a part of a communist cell.
Not true, but Miłosz lost his job anyway, and he blamed Kolbe. But his grievance was more than personal. Kolbe and the newspapers he ran espoused a kind of Polish Catholic nationalism that Miłosz, himself a lifelong practicing Catholic, couldn't stand.
Allergic to, very much so.
And along with that Polish Catholic nationalism came the anti-Semitism that was embedded in Polish culture at the time. It's unclear if Kolbe personally was an anti-Semite, but his newspapers sure were, which is what makes the next chapter in the story so remarkable. When the Nazis invaded and started murdering Poles and Jews, Kolbe used his monastery to help potential victims.
He was taking in refugees without reference to who they were and giving them food and shelter and providing transit to help them out. There are estimates that he may have helped up to 2,000 Jews.
Kolbe himself did not escape persecution.
I don't think anyone knows quite what the charges were, not that the Nazis really needed them. He was incarcerated in Auschwitz.
And it was there in Auschwitz where Kolbe's heroism became the stuff of legend. One day, in the summer of 1941, a prisoner disappeared. The rule at Auschwitz was that if one prisoner escaped, 10 would be killed. 10 men were randomly selected for what was called the starvation bunker. One man who had been in the Polish resistance began
calling out, "My poor wife, my poor children, what will they do?" And Kolbe took off his hat, stepped forward, and said, "I am a Catholic priest. Let me take his place. I am old, and he has a wife and children." The commandant was Karl, I guess he was called the Butcher Fritz. One observer said his face turned blue with anger, and he instinctively pulled his pistol. But miraculously, he accepted Kolbe's offer.
The missing prisoner, it turned out, had fallen into a latrine and drowned. But the 10 men, now including Kolbe, still went to the starvation bunker. After 2 weeks, only 4 were still alive.
Kolbe was the only one of them still fully conscious, and he offered his arm to the executioner and was injected with carbolic acid.
The man Kolbe had saved survived Auschwitz and lived to the age of 95. This turned out to be the only documented case at Auschwitz of one prisoner sacrificing himself for another. It quickly became a very famous story in Poland. Miłosz, meanwhile, survived the war and wrote piercingly of the devastation the war brought to Poland. He worked several years for the Polish communist government as a diplomat before defecting to France and finally settling in Berkeley, where he taught in the Slavics department. He lived in relative obscurity until he was awarded the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1980. Kolbe was eventually canonized by the church, which irritated Milosz.
It seemed to be something that had gotten under his skin, because on a number of occasions in the subsequent years, he lashed out about it, lashed out even in writing.
About what?
About how Kolbe had gotten him sacked from the radio job, and about Kolbe's Catholicism, which he called horrible or repugnant, and yet saying, how could he become a saint?
But Cynthia Haven argues that Milosz may have had more complex feelings about his old nemesis. She recounts a story that she learned from a friend of Milosz's.
Morton Marcus, a Santa Cruz poet.
In 1970, at a party at his home in Berkeley, Milosz noticed that some of the students were wearing white armbands.
And after a few drinks, Milosz became confrontational and said, well, what are you protesting?
And they said they were on their way to a demonstration against the American invasion of Cambodia.
And he said, well, that's what you're against. What are you for?
And the students said,
peace and love. Milosz said to them, love, love, love. Talk to me about love when they come into your cell one morning, line you all up and say, you and you, step forward. It is your time to die unless any of your friends loves you so much he wants to take your place. It was a very revealing moment, I thought, and it kind of took my breath away.
In print, Milosz apparently never expressed admiration for Kolbe's heroism, but his poems are full of a kind of survivor's guilt for having lived through a historical calamity that killed not only Kolbe, but many of Milosz's friends and colleagues. He did write poems of witness, though, but his poems anguish over the impossibility of comprehending what the dead went through as they were murdered, and his poems frequently question the value of poetry itself. In the year 2000, Milosz gave a reading at Stanford University. Cynthia Haven was there and got a recording of it. And together, she and I listened to an excerpt from this recording from his book-length poem, A Treatise on Poetry. This excerpt is not about Kolbe, but it does express the poet's desperate desire to remember the dead and his doubt about poetry's ability to do so. One of his translators, the poet Robert Haas, introduced and read the excerpt.
There's an address to the figure of the spirit of history out walking in the next part of the poem, the god to whom everyone has to tend. And then in a series of lines that are still in this form, but in triplet stanzas, there's a speaker. It's not quite clear who. You realize it must be a Jewish speaker. When they put a rope around my neck, when they choke off my breath with a rope, I'll turn around once, and what will I be? When they give me an injection of phenol, when I walk half a step with phenol in my veins, what wisdom of the prophets will enlighten me? When they tear us from this one embrace, when they destroy forever this shaft of tender light, what heaven will see us reunited? A singer cursed white clouds above the ghetto. I used to give pennies to the blind poet. Let his songs stay with me to the end. On the wall of my cell for a whole night, I carved a word of love so that the syllables would survive and roll with this prison around the sun. I was beating the rhythm on an empty can. I who am not, who only was once, there where the road led to the camp gate. My trace, a diary hidden between bricks. Perhaps someday it will be unearthed, a day of forgiveness or a day of penance. Soil of annihilation, soil of hate. No word will purify it ever. No such poet will be born. For even if one had been called, he walked beside us to the last gate, for only a child of the ghetto could utter the words.
That was Robert Haas reading an excerpt from A Treatise on Poetry by Czesław Milosz. Now, it's striking to me, Cynthia, that poets are mentioned several times in this poem. What do you make of the stanza when he says, on the wall of myself for a whole night I carved a word of love so that syllables survive and roll with this prison around the sun? It's a very beautiful image of the permanence of the written word.
There's hope for its permanence.
Hope for its permanence, yeah, because the guy doesn't know if anybody will ever read it or not. But is that Milosz's version of what a real poet should achieve, that kind of permanence?
It'd be easy to say yes, wouldn't it? I'm not sure. He had so many doubts about everything, mm-hmm. Including the permanence of language, including his ability to... Well, let's face it, language isn't permanent, is it?
Yeah.
It's nice to think that poetry lasts forever, but that's another romantic illusion.
Mm.
And Milos knew that, but it's what he had.
Yeah, it's what he had.
It's the weapon he had.
And it's a word of love that he wants to survive. Here's somebody about to be murdered, and here and then what the guy carves on the prison wall basically is a word of love.
Yes, and it's interesting that you picked that out because of course Kolbe was named a martyr of charity by John Paul II when they canonized him finally, and they had to create a whole separate category of saints to accommodate Kolbe because he didn't per se die for his faith, he died for another man. And yet that kind of love is exactly what we consider to be a saint, and it's that kind of love that Milos seemed to long for. That's the strain that echoes through his poetry and speaks loudly to so many people, is this longing for the love that moves the sun and other stars. It would be a mistake to see him only as a poet of witness in the sense of a Holocaust and the uprising and things like that, not to see this tremendous aching longing for love.
You can read Cynthia Haven's piece, The Doubter and the Saint, on our website, poetryfoundation.org. She also has a book of interviews called Czesław Miłosz Conversations, and another book, Invisible Rope, Portraits of Czesław Miłosz, is forthcoming. There are many books of translations of Miłosz's poetry. A good place to start is New and Collected Poems, published by Echo Press. Let us know what you think of this program. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The music used in this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.